Is obedience to the law ever a means of gaining favor with God? Welcome to The Good Word. We are continuing our series on fruit of the Spirit. Today we move beyond the list of Galatians 5. Look at another fruit of the Spirit, righteousness. My conversation partners are fellow teachers in the Walla Walla University School of Theology, Aline Bauer and Bruce Johansson. Thank you to both of you.
Thank you.
So, let me just dump into that question now. What does obedience have to do with gaining favor with God? How does he look at it? How do we look at it?
Depends how you... it depends what obedience means. I'm going to throw that one in there.
Well,
normally
obedience is not a happy word.
It's not a happy word.
No.
It's a very, very essential word in human dealings with one another and with God.
Yeah.
Is it surface obedience? Is it? See, for me, obedience can not simply mean mindless following of rules, but it can also mean commitment, a decision of commitment. And Paul has, I'm going to start off here with a phrase from Paul. Paul talks at the beginning of the book of Romans, which is about righteousness by faith.
Yes.
He talks about the obedience of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And most translations say obedience to the faith or faith that springs from obedience. I'm not so sure those grab the whole idea. I think that's there. But I do think faith is a form of obedience.
Uh-huh.
Faith is a decision.
Uh-huh.
Faith isn't just some kind of funny feeling that you have that's positive.
And in that sense, it fades into faithfulness.
Faithfulness, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, this. I used to be really, you know, had these strong dichotomies, you know.
Uh-huh.
Keep the law is not the way to get salvation. Oh, but then what do you mean by keep the law?
Mm-hmm. See, I believe that the action of can be exactly the same, but you keep it from gratitude, not from mere duty.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. If it comes from gratitude, I can do all kinds of things.
Yes.
If I'm grateful.
Well, and that's coming from a changed heart, which is really what the Sermon on the Mount is all about.
Yeah.
You know, I want your heart, and a good tree producing good fruit.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Has
the heart been changed?
Yeah. And, of course, you see, when you recognize, and this is so clear in the Old Testament, I mean, Deuteronomy 4, where Moses says, look, nobody else has a law.
Yeah.
A God who's shown us how to live.
Yeah.
This is wonderful.
Yes.
This is wonderful.
And Psalms 119.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Which is just the longest psalm is in praise of the law.
Yeah.
And all the good things it brings to your life and all the delight that David feels in it.
When did that view change, Bruce?
You know, it's a hard call, but I would guess that with the shift in Judaism after the Babylonian captivity,
mm-hmm.
where they felt their disobedience, their idolatry brought on them such calamity,
mm-hmm.
then they were, it was actually motivated well. They wanted to really keep God's law so that this terrible thing would never happen again.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the human heart is such that some people always kept, I think, a good attitude. There were rabbis who were not hidebound legalists.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that love was the basis. But I think that's
where it was.
Many years ago, I remember hearing a radio ad by Beacons Moving and Storage. And they were, according to the ad, they were trying out new potential workers, interviewing them. And they had a floor covered with eggs. And they said, now we'd like to have you carry this piano across these eggs. You know, and everything gets crushed. Oh, no, no. He says, I'll try harder. No. Try softer.
Yeah.
And there is this sense in which we keep trying harder, but it just makes it worse.
Yes.
And I think that's what happened.
Yes.
They tried harder. You know,
harder and harder.
And you have to back up and recognize it is for God's good. In fact, that leads to a phrase which I love to play around with out of Romans 5. While we were yet sinners, while we were yet weak, while we were yet enemies, in other words, we didn't do a thing to earn our grace. That's when Christ died for us.
That's right. Yeah.
And there's always that indicative before there's the imperative.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, when you study any of the letters of Paul, you've got that difference there.
Yeah.
It's even in the Ten Commandments. I brought you out of the land of Egypt. I brought you out of slavery. Now,
therefore.
Do this, therefore.
Yeah.
Do yeah. this. Do this. Yeah.
But of course, for me, as a natural rebel, I just thrive on Jeremiah 31, the New Covenant promise, mm-hmm. where the law is completely written on the heart mm-hmm. and nobody will say, know the Lord. Mm-hmm. They shall no longer teach one another. Why? Because the law will be completely internalized.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm forever overworking because I hate to be told what to do, so I keep volunteering for things before people can tell me that I should.
Yeah.
I look forward to that kind of world where it'll be completely internalized.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's another thing that feeds very much into the legalist mindset that we have. You know, we're not good enough.
Right.
As parents, we've done it to our kids.
Mm-hmm.
We've told them, if you're good, then I will reward you in this way.
If you get the garden weeded, then we go to the zoo.
Yeah, you know, and so that's there, but it also has a reverse side. You know, if you're good implies you're not good.
Right.
And you got something to do.
Mm-hmm.
You have got something to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's almost prevalent.
Yeah.
I don't know of any families. I hope it's not. There are some families who don't have it, maybe. But it's.
But, you know, Joe Galusha tells a story, and I've heard him tell it. He gets pretty emotional about it because when he was growing up, his allowance was always tied to a list of things. You do these things, then you get your allowance.
Yeah.
And it programmed him for righteousness by works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when his boy came along, he decided that he was going to give his boy his allowance for no other reason than he was just his son. Beautiful to hear Joe tell about this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is your allowance for no other reason
than
you are my son.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that if we can come that way to God, that He gives us these things.
Yeah.
But there's some real benefits to this, and that's where I think that the good news feature of the Old Testament, God has shown us how to live, and everything He asks us to do is for our best good. See?
You know, the familial metaphor is so powerful all the way through Scripture.
Uh-huh.
It's relational.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are people who have been so wounded by their sense of sin in their lives and their incapacity to do anything good that they feel like God does it all. But I do think that once one has started the path with God, it's a relationship and then there's responsibility.
Mm.
And we tend to lose sight of that if we push grace into cheap grace. The responsibility is to respond by the obedience of faith. Faith is an act of decision. It is an obedient attitude. It's an obedient decision.
I remember the line which Paul Grove used when I was taking classes from him about the Old Testament. God's people were never chosen just for privilege, but for responsibility.
Responsibility,
So easy.
I don't want to lose that element, you see.
Yeah.
And it's so easy for evangelicals, you know, we have the right gospel, ta-da, you know, wonderful.
Yeah.
But the only reason it's given is so that you can reach out and share. And that's why the fruit of the Spirit passage in Galatians 5,
mm-hmm.
freedom was given so that you may be a blessing to others.
Yes.
And anything which detracts from that blessing that you give to others,
mm-hmm.
that's really what the trouble is. So.
Well, have we looked at the text even in Galatians that Paul writes here in verse 5? It is through the Spirit by faith that we wait for the hope of righteousness.
That's right. Yeah.
So he does. It's not listed in the various fruits, but it's sort of the overall one before he even gets into the fruit. I made it plural there. Sorry, Alden, instead of singular.
Let's play with the word righteousness just a little bit. I think there's some richness there that which mm-hmm. Because it's another one of those unhappy words, righteousness and holy. To me, it feels like the priest and the Levi who were walking by on the other side of the road, you know, gathering their robes about them so that they're not contaminated. But there's got to be a more positive way of viewing righteousness.
In my classes, I ask the kids sometimes, you're introducing a friend of yours to another friend. And how many of you would feel comfortable saying, this is John, my friend. He's really a righteous guy. Or he is so holy.
Yes. That's the last thing. See.
It's the last word you'd want to use, right?
You know, I used to, Bruce, the same thing. I would ask, you know, I'd go through these, what quality would you like to have rank these in terms of a roommate.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And righteous and holy are always bottom of the heap.
Yeah.
Because it feels like holy feels like holier than thou.
Yeah. Right.
And that I will be judged by them.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's so sad because they're beautiful words
in
the right context.
I like to think of righteousness in terms of the quality of doing the right thing.
Yeah.
See?
Mm-hmm.
And that gets away from it because if I have a roommate, I want a roommate who always does the right thing. He shuts up when he's supposed to and speaks up when he's supposed to, is gone when he's gone and present when he's needed. You know, if you do that, then it gets away from this stained glass flavor that I think is unfortunate about the term righteousness.
There's also another dimension to righteousness, and that is justice. When you do the right thing, you uphold justice. And I don't know of anything in this world that people can get more riled over is when they're treated unjustly.
In fact, that's precisely the point of Abraham's complaint over Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yes.
You are the judge of earth.
Uh-huh.
Should not the judge of all the earth do what is right?
Yes. See? Yes.
Mm-hmm. You cannot destroy the innocent and the wicked together. Yeah. See, that's a very crucial thing.
So to redeem this word righteousness, sometimes it's left so superficial. It's left very surface by Jesus, unless your righteousness exceeds that of those who are legalists, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. And I do think the kind of love that is behind justice is that makes it so much more meaningful for me to look at rules and regulations and then ask, for what purpose? I remember in academy, I hated the handbook because it never motivated.
Yeah.
These are the rules, keep them.
Mm.
Whereas, same way with the book Messages to Young People, for me, was just deadly.
Yes.
Now, what I've discovered is that there are many people who are helped by that book. In fact, just in the last few weeks, I've discovered that.
Yeah.
So not everyone will react the same way, to be sure.
Mm-hmm.
One last question before time runs out on us. The protecting nature of God's law of righteousness, and I'm thinking here of a line in Psalm 19, that has become one of really quite intrigues me. Psalm 19, first of all, celebrates nature, and then it goes into the law. And he says here, more to be desired are they than gold, even much fine gold, sweeter also than honey and the drippings of the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is your servant warned, and in keeping them there is great reward. That preservative, protecting care of righteousness or the law or whatever, I think is something which is terribly important. In my own experience, I think that if I am incredibly grateful for my careful Advent suffering, because if it weren't for those boundaries that were built in by my parents, I think I would be a much greater risk in the world than I am.
Life without boundaries is chaos.
That's perhaps why the ancient Israelites saw it as such a blessing.
And the celebration in Psalm 119 is just wonderful. I do think, though, that when you have it laid over again and again and again, then you get to Romans 7, the eighth thing, and all those things. But our time is up, so we must now conclude for today. Thank you, Bruce, and Lee, for helping us. Next week, we're going to talk about another one. It's from Galatians 5. Talk about the fruit of the Spirit as fruit. My thanks to Michael for being our program engineer and to all of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson. We'd like to remind you that Good Word is available more often and in more places. If you would like to have access to it again, simply go to the Positive Life Radio website, PLR.org. Under programs, you can find Good Word. You can listen to your heart's content. You can also order a CD if you wish. All available on the Positive Life Radio website, PLR.org.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.